Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Tai, and in for Greg Matzik, it's Adam Roberts.
Merry Christmas Eve, everybody.
Merry Christmas Eve to you too, Jessica. How are you doing?
I am great. I feel like we're going to have a wonderful show here, and then it is off to the holidays. I feel like for the most part, people are very cheery and in good moods, even the people who have to work. I feel like this is the time where not a lot of people around. You can really just like get in the zone and get to it.
You know, they're always saying about how it seems like you're always being pulled in so many directions, but when the office numbers are a little down, you do have that flexibility a bit. Get some stuff done maybe you'd be putting off otherwise. There's also that solidarity that, hey, we're all in this together on Christmas Eve.
Might be the holiday, but we've got a big show for the next 3 hours here. Someone could wake up Christmas morning a billionaire. But experts say the real challenge starts after you win. We'll look at the financial risk if you actually match all the numbers in tonight's massive Powerball drawing. Plus, ever wonder what it's like behind the scenes of a hit home improvement show? A woman from Waukesha knows firsthand. She'll take us inside an Emmy-nominated production coming up at 12:37. But first,
it's now at noon on Wisconsin's Midday News.
New today, ICE documents reveal the Trump administration plans to hold thousands of immigrants in warehouses. The plan is to build some of these warehouses from the ground up and renovate others. CBS's Michael Wallace has the details just coming in.
The administration is seeking contractors to renovate warehouses across the country into large-scale holding centers. The Washington Post reviewed a draft solicitation, which says the new facilities will minimize costs, shorten processing times, and speed up the deportation process. 7 large warehouses would each hold 5,000 to 10,000 people. 16 smaller warehouses would hold up to 1,500 detainees each.
The warehouses would hold people before they're deported. The Department of Homeland Security declined to answer questions about the warehouse plan.
Heading overseas, where there's a small sign of hope this holiday season in the Middle East. Sound there from Christmas celebrations in Bethlehem, where they've returned for the first time since the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza began back in October of 2023. More from CBS's Linda Gradstein reporting from outside the Church of the Nativity.
Standing next to the large Christmas tree in Manger Square, decorated with hundreds of red and gold balls, Bethlehem Mayor Maher Kanawati says it's time for the birthplace of Jesus to celebrate again.
I think this was the seed of hope that we are trying to grab in order to have a new beginning for Palestine, a new beginning for the people that endured immense hardships.
He said that while the economic situation in Bethlehem is still tough, he hopes tourists will soon return to the city. Linda Gradstein for CBS News, Bethlehem.
As Linda referred to there at the end, the ceremony largely attended by clergy members. Few members of the public were on site, largely symbolic of the fear many still feel in the region, rather. While around 15,000 visitors would arrive every day in times of peace in the area, the absence of those tourists devastating that city's tourism industry, driving unemployment up to 70% in the area. But still, a sign of hope and some normalcy in a troubled part of the world.
Well, we love seeing our family over the holidays, but we don't love the germs that often come with those get-togethers. Dr. Alec Patel explains what symptoms to watch out for if you're feeling sick and aren't sure whether it's a cold, the flu, or something else.
It's really hard to tell if you actually have one virus versus another. If you have a common cold, you may get symptoms such as congestion, a sore throat, fatigue, coughing, things that may have you not have such a silent night. Sometimes with flu or COVID, people may say, I feel like I've been hit by a sleigh, because you can get those really bad muscle aches. What you want to do is, if you are concerned or want to know your next steps, go to a doctor and get a swab, which can help you differentiate what type of virus you may or may not have.
Dr. Patel with all the puns there.
Yeah, I see you're not so slick, Dr. Patel. I see you working.
Remember, a common cold in you might be something serious in somebody else. Mm-hmm. For a general cold, rest up, stay hydrated, and make sure you're getting the proper nutrients. That's going to do it. That's going to help you get better. Well, $1.7 billion is on the line tonight. Woo! Have you bought your Powerball ticket? But what comes after a Powerball win? ABC's Jim Ryan is next in The Dream, The Odds, and why experts say winning can come with big risks. Now at noon, sponsored by Flanners Home Entertainment. Visit them at flanners.com. Sound advice at the best price. Just press play. Is there a better stocking stuffer than a shot at $1.7 billion?
I can't think of one.
Oh, my goodness. Tonight's Christmas Eve Powerball drawing is one of the biggest in history. And while the odds of winning are about 1 in 292 million, there's a chance. There's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Little chance. But financial advisors warn winning big can come with big risks. ABC's Jim Ryan joins us to talk about the massive jackpot, the surge in ticket buying, and what experts say you should and absolutely should not do if your holiday wishes come true. First things first, Jim, did you buy a ticket?
Oh, yes. Sure. Why? I don't know. Am I going to win? No. But, you know, as Jim Carrey said in that movie in Dumb and Dumber, there is a chance, right?
Oh,
are
my...
you telling me there's a chance?
Yes, exactly. My husband, actually, he came home and he said, okay, here you go. Pick one. He bought 12 tickets disperse to family members. That was the hardest decision I had to make. I had these 12 tickets to look at and to pick one of them. I had reasons that I liked this one, reasons that I liked this one. It was tough, Jim.
Well, so let's say you buy 10 tickets. Does that mean your chances are suddenly 1 in 29 million instead of 1 in 292 million? Maybe, but what does it matter? I mean, 29 million to 1 is pretty stark odds that you're going to win anything at all. But, you know, there are smaller prizes as well. Last time anybody has hit all six numbers was in September, and the prize back then was also about $1.7 billion, same as it is for tonight's drawing. So, yeah, there are smaller prizes to be had. But, you know, don't forget, $1 million is still life-changing.
Yes.
Just because it's not $1.7 billion, that's a life-changing sum. So you should be ready, if you actually win that, to handle it properly. Because statistics say that about 1 in 3 lottery winners end up going broke at some point in their lives.
Why is this jackpot so massive? Is it a combination of things? Just, you know, now it's $2 instead of $1 to play, and just the fact that nobody's hit all those numbers since, what did you say, September?
Sure. Yeah, it's just a matter of the more people paying in, more people playing, and obviously the more people who have bought a $2 ticket, the higher the jackpot is going to go. And so here we sit at $1.7 billion. If nobody gets it tonight, all six numbers, it'll roll on over for Saturday's drawing.
So, Jim, Jessica mentions the family 12 of tickets that had to be dispersed. What do experts suggest for dealing with family members who, let's just say, pie in the sky, hypothetical, you are the winner. You get the Powerball winning ticket, and suddenly every family member under the sun is knocking on your door saying, hey, haven't heard from you in a while. How have you been? Saw you on the news the other day. So where are we going with this?
Well, that's true. And there's no law governing that. You don't have to give up any of your winnings, even to your brother-in-law or your uncle or to anybody, really. And in some places, you can keep it quiet. Wisconsin is not one of those states. But in about 10 states, you can remain anonymous forever. You don't have to do anything to go public. In a few states, though, over 24 states, your name is out there regardless. And in a few states, if you hit a certain threshold, say $10,000 in winnings, you can stay anonymous at that point. Below that, no, you can't. So, yeah, your cousin, depending upon which state you live in, will or will not find out that you've won at all, Adam.
What do financial advisors say is the first thing a winner should do?
Hire somebody. Hire a team you trust, not just one financial advisor, but maybe a whole team, depending upon the size of the winnings, to set you straight. Obviously, people have all sorts of dreams going through their minds as they purchase their tickets about the house they'll buy or the island they'll buy, maybe, and what they'll do with that. But yeah, somewhere in that mix of dreams should be, you know what? I also need to plan on handling it properly. And having a team of financial advisors, maybe, who are recommended to you that can handle this or help you to handle it the right way, so you don't end up being the 1 in 3 who end up bankrupt.
Do the experts give any advice on whether, if you're going to try to go for the Powerball, if you should try to go solo? Because I know a lot of offices around whenever the jackpot reaches the billion-dollar right now threshold, we get the old office pool. But do the experts suggest maybe against that? Because kind of similar to the family element, it can get messy if, surprise, surprise, you win.
Well, you're right, yeah, and you just hope maybe if you do have an office pool going that you have an agreement with everyone that regardless of who bought the ticket that you're going to share it all. Now, I don't know if that means signing a contract or something. For example, I'm in an office pool right now. The woman who buys the tickets every week, I trust her. I think that if we won, she would pay me and everybody else who... Yeah?
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, but if she didn't, let's say she just took the money and ran... I don't think I have any recourse because, yeah, I gave her the money free and clear, didn't stipulate that she'd have to pay me. It's the understanding, but there's nothing written down.
Jim, do you remember a man named Jack Whitaker of West Virginia who won the Powerball like in the early 2000s?
Sounds familiar.
Okay, so I think about him when I was saying this yesterday to some of our fans. I said, if you don't win and you're bummed, just remember that a lot of times these massive winners, just their lives kind of go down the tubes. This guy, all of a sudden, he got all this money. He was spending it in kind of weird ways in some cases. He all of a sudden had family issues and people were dying. I mean, it's a dramatic story. Don't get me wrong. You'll have to Google Jack Whitaker of West Virginia and the Powerball. But all of these terrible things just started to happen to him after he won Powerball. And a lot of it did have to do with the money. He has since passed away, bless his heart. But why do so many lottery winners end up in trouble despite this huge payday?
Well, I think it's running into that sudden windfall and having all this money, massive amounts of money in some cases, and not really having dealt with that before. And you've got no experience with that. And so you're going it on your own and making your own decisions. And that's where you can get into trouble. I think that's why the advice from financial planners is that you maybe it's self-serving for them. Well, that you hire a financial planner or a team of them to ensure that everything is good. The first decision, I think, once you sign the ticket, and by the way, you should sign the ticket if you win to make sure that you can legally claim it. Do I take the single payout or do I take the annuity? Because in this case, if you claim the one-time benefit, it's $781 million. It's only $781 million, Jessica. If you want the full $1.7 billion, it's still not going to be $1.7 billion because a lot of taxes will be taken out. But you'll earn that over 30 years through an annuity. So that's another decision to make.
I'm curious, Jim, maybe you have the answer to this, maybe you don't. Are there any statistics or does anybody track which states seem to see the most winners? I ask because my hometown of Fond du Lac got a little bit of fame in the 1990s for becoming the Miracle Mile. There was a stretch of South Main Street where the Ma and Pa's and now a BP gas station are that just seemed to churn out winner after winner after winner. Wasn't always the big one, but it got the moniker the Miracle Mile. And so I wonder, are there any states where you may just have a better shot than others statistically?
Yeah, statistics show that New York State has the highest percentage of lottery winners. Maybe it's because it's a high population state and more people are participating in the games. But yeah, it's had 43 Mega Million winners alone in that jackpot.
I think there's something to be said, too. Would you guys agree that even for those who don't win, there's something about having that hope and having that little bit of joy in the meantime before they call the numbers? That's just fun, especially around the holidays.
Yeah, well, I think people are eternal optimists. It's just like Jim Carrey in that movie, right? You know, she tells him his chances are one in a million, and he says, great, I still have a chance, you know. So I think there's a little bit of that in everybody, Jessica.
All right, good luck to everybody. If you're playing, Jim, I hope some of your numbers hit. I hope more of our numbers win. Our numbers hit, but I hope everybody gets a little piece of the pie. You know, at the end of the day, I also say, even if we just get our money back, that wouldn't be
too bucks
sad.
Is 2 bucks.
You haven't lost anything.
Merry Christmas, Jim. We appreciate it.
Same to you. Take care.
I was thinking I kind of want to go and get one more. My husband bought those tickets last night, but I'd kind of like to go and just get one. I like to do it. There's this gas station that's downtown in downtown Milwaukee. I feel like downtown Milwaukee never usually hits, but, you know, maybe it could be this time. but I don't actually know if I have cash on me. That's the thing. You have to have the cash.
That is so, you know, I was thinking the other thing too. Yeah, you can't just walk up with your credit or your debit card and buy. You have to, have that cash. And I can't remember the last time I had any cash in my wallet, which is wild to say. Can you imagine saying that 5-6 years ago? I don't know, I have no cash in my wallet. And now it's just an afterthought, but I can't recall.
I don't usually play. I think I learned that you have to have cash maybe 5 years ago when we had a big one. That's a time when everybody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. It's just fun. It's nice to dream a little dream, to have a little hope, right? So that's usually the only time we play. And I think I went to the grocery store and thought, oh, maybe I'll just go with my credit card. Oh, no, you can't do that. Wait, do I have cash? Let me look.
Is your threshold billion with a B? Like, is that, I think, the common number right now where people finally start going, okay, might as well. You can't lose if you don't play or whatever.
I think now it is, but that's more recent because these $1 billion ones, I mean, it used to be, I don't know, 700 million would get you really excited. And that is still something worthy to cheer about, right? If you win. But I do think now a lot of people don't do it until they see that B.
By the way, all those people who are going to play tonight, as far as your odds, I always love playing this clip from ABC.
You're more likely to go to the ER for a pogo stick related injury.
So keep that in mind, but good luck to everyone tonight.
Ah, geez. Good luck, everybody.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holiday. Cause no matter how far away you roam.
Well, you don't have to speak Spanish to appreciate this story. Pero que bien si si habla español.
Well done.
Did I do that okay?
That was very well, very good.
I haven't broken out my Spanish in a while, so I thought I'd give it a try. If you love Ask This Old House or any of those shows that make you think, I might be able to do that, there's a newer series getting national attention, and a Waukesha woman stars in it. The show just wrapped up its third season, and Carmen De La Paz is here in the studio to tell us all about it. Great to have you back.
Thank you. It's nice to see you both. It's nice to be back.
Some of you might remember Carmen from her incredible work with the Waukesha Memorial Sculpture as we talked to her about that last month. And your talent, it goes so far. You're also a DIY expert and the perfect person to be featured on this new version of Ask This Old House. How did your journey take you from Waukesha, Wisconsin to national television? How did you initially get involved in this?
Wow, that's a long time ago. But this is actually my 56th television show on
56.
My 9th network.
Wow.
And my 3rd Emmy nomination through this show. So I was actually a music theater major in New York City. I went to Syracuse University. Been on Broadway, been off Broadway. I sing, I dance, I play a bunch of instruments. And then I became this poor artist, well, actor, in New York City. And I wanted to save money. And I wanted to live well. And I have, unfortunately, some good taste. So I figured out really quickly that if I could wield some power tools, I could create a very nice living home experience. And then quickly thereafter, I was working for Warner Brothers. I was the director of TV publicity. I went from there. They promoted me to Los Angeles. I bought my first house. And then I started to really get into making money with flipping houses. And that's when HGTV found me. And it's literally been like one show done, the next call comes in. One show done, the next call comes in. And I've been doing it for a very long time.
What's the trickiest part of mixing, doing what you do with redeveloping homes versus the reality of the television world of having to be in a place and be in this right lighting, et cetera?
That's a great question because first I think that so many of the DIY shows have kind of warped the reality of really how long things take, how much work it takes, because production companies want to compress everything and cut it out and cut it out and cut it out and just give you very microscopic looks. And then the other thing is that they want you to smile and look happy and pleasant while you're wielding a circular saw.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, wait, do you understand what I'm doing right here? So it's just a matter of A, I'm trained to be on camera and to perform. That's what I do. But I've learned to do the power tools and I've become very good at it. And so it's first of all, it's safety because you do not want to portray anything that is not safe because then you're liable
right.
and there's a responsibility. And the second thing is I really, 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 really enjoy it. So when you're doing something that you enjoy, as you both know, it doesn't feel like work and it's not that difficult.
You tape on the actual This Old House set in Boston. That is so cool. What's
yes.
that experience like behind the scenes?
Well, the first time, I've already taped there a few times, and the first time they flew us out, I felt like I had arrived at Carpenter Heaven. You know, because you grow up watching these shows forever, and then we were literally taping at a Home Depot part of the episode, and the This Old House producers planted Tommy, who's like the old guard, to come and actually surprise us
nice.
In the middle of an aisle. So it just feels like you've arrived. It certainly feels like you've been validated, especially as a female wielding power tools to be on this set. It's pretty amazing.
What's a myth about home improvement TV shows too many people believe? Because I found myself peek behind the curtain, watching a lot of old school Bob Barker Price is Right
yes.
on YouTube. And so I love this the show in general, but I'm always analyzing it not just to play the games, but look for those little things that are going on behind the scenes to peel that back. What's a myth that too many people believe about these kind of shows?
It takes longer, it costs more money, and there's always usually something goes wrong. But that's the part they won't show you.
Mm.
That's honest.
That last one, I think, in particular, needs to be repeated. Not everything is picture perfect on these projects.
Oh, absolutely. And I on camera, I'm also the senior producer for Family Handyman magazine. So I tape for their streaming channel. I do their website content and their magazine content. And I'm the first one to say to the camera guy, come here, come look at the mistake, because I'm going to show you how to fix your mistake. Half of the challenge of actually having the courage to do things with your hands is how do you get out of stuff that you are inevitably going to mess up?
What does it mean to you, Carmen, to represent Spanish-speaking homeowners in a space that wasn't always diverse?
No, I mean, I think it's a huge thing. The cool thing is I've been in the Spanish language DIY genre of television for a very long time. I worked with Fox International for 5 years, and I did four different shows that were distributed to 18 different countries
wow.
Around the world. And I've worked for Telemundo. I've worked for Discovery Español. So it's kind of like I'm the old guard in this world. And I'm very proud to be a woman. I'm very proud, especially with so many of these shows airing in Spanish language countries where women are not supposed to be doing power tools, to be able to show that you can and you can still look cute and you can still, you know, have a feminine essence to the process.
Do you hear it all from the new guard of women and Hispanics coming up in this world that have said to you, hey, I watch what you do and I was inspired?
Actually, you know, I really don't. That's the truth. You know, I don't think a lot of Latina women have broken that barrier. Sadly, I invite them to, and I'm happy to reach out and help people be better at that. But I don't think that glass ceiling has been broken on any of the English language networks. Look at the profile of, I'm not going to say the networks, but look at the profiles.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly tall blondes, you know, that are willing to show cleavage. Sorry.
I mean,
you said it on me.
I can.
So, Carmen, what is one DIY mistake you see people make over and over at home?
That they don't take their safety precautions. You know, there's eyes, ears, and breathing, your lungs. Those are things that once they are damaged, you cannot repair them. Hearing doesn't come back once it's damaged, so wear ear protection. Eyesight for sure cannot be retrieved, so wear safety glasses. And if you're dealing with dust or heavy chemicals, wear the right respiratory protection. And I think that people don't. I'm also guilty of it. I'm going to do this real fast. And I just think people need to take safety first.
You just reminded me, for those of you on streaming, and if you're not, you can text WATCH to the Sony Unlimited WTMJ Talk and text line, because we do have some pictures up of the show. We also have a trailer that's playing as well. And I did notice in a couple of the pictures that you are wearing those safety glasses. How often do you actually have those discussions? Or is it something at this point where you just know and you're grabbing your safety goggles for this one and you're doing that for this? Or do you actually have those talks on the set?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's like, do we need it for this? And 9 times out of 10, it's yes. You know, and they'll ask me, well, what do you want? Do you want to use them? I'm like, yeah. If there's even a doubt that you might not have to use them, then just use them and show them. Why not?
Do you see, as we're doing a lot of look ahead to next year right now, this time of year on WTMJ, a lot of what do you see in 2026 kind of questions. In mm-hmm. your world, what's a home improvement trend you could see really coming to light next year?
Well, I think people are buckling down with, you know, expenses. I think everything from materials to hiring other people to do the work is getting more and more expensive. I think people are going to be more willing to do the work themselves. And I think people are going to go down to just the real basic things, like what can I do that's going to create most impact, i.e. paint, you know, instead of knocking out walls or doing additions. I think people are going to go back to just the nuts and bolts of basics to still feel like they're living in a great space and they're able to change things. But I don't think people are going to be willing to spend the big bucks that you've seen in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're right on that one. What does it mean to you to be nominated for an Emmy? Not just once, but a couple of times for this particular show.
Well, you know, it's a dream. You know, a short Puerto Rican kid from Wisconsin doesn't think that that will ever happen in their lifetime. And if they do, you get shut down real fast. You know, like you're not supposed to have that dream. So it's an honor. I'm going to be really honest with you. Now I'm like, I want the Emmy.
Yeah,
you know, when you've done it 3 times, you know, you're like, you know, so I'm hoping we've got hopes. They're going to submit us again for next year and we'll see what happens.
What's the competition like?
Gosh, you know, the best part of this year's competition is that to be nominated up against Martha Stewart.
Wow.
I mean, come on.
Wow.
To be up against Chip Gaines and his wife, you know, these are the heavy hitters in this genre. And a true fact is that we were nominated up against the English version of This Old House, but we're the ones that got the nomination. They didn't, which was fascinating. I didn't even know that. So it's when they say it's an honor to be nominated, it is an honor when it's Martha Stewart and when it's the Gaines, you know, huge conglomerate of what they've become and what they do. And so it's just an honor to be there. And it was really neat to be in the theater and for them to go, and the nominees are, and you see your face up on the screen. I mean, you know, that alone was worth a trip to Los Angeles.
Season 3 premieres in April. What can viewers expect and where can they watch it? Because there's so many places for viewers to watch these shows these days.
Yeah. You can catch us on Roku, and it's a live streaming show, so you can look it up and get it whenever you want. The cool thing is that it does have English language subtitles. So you can watch, you know, the English version, the Spanish version, and you're not going to skip a beat on the information. It's very similar to what you see in Ask This Old House. It's kind of like we're peeling back how a house works. Like, this is really how water pressure works. This is really what happens with water damage. This is really, this last season, actually, earlier this month, I was in Boston, is when we taped the 3rd season, yeah. And I did a whole segment on how do you fix drywall. And I went from a small hole to a medium hole to a big hole. And so it's just real basic stuff, but it's kind of like, ah, cool, I can do that.
Well, I have your number, so I might have a couple
Please,
questions you for you.
Please, you got a free 1-800-CARMEN, Jessica. You got it.
I love it. That is Carmen De La Paz. Thank you so much, and good luck.
Thank you.
I'm getting that Emmy.
Thank
Finally
you. If
it.
We get it, I'll come back and see you.
I love it. It is 12:51. Coming up next, it's our year in review. Show today, we have 9 1-minute stories for you that define the year. Categories include weather, sports, politics, entertainment, and health. No rankings, no order. So what should we roll first? We're going to do something fun here today. I put the categories into a grab bag. Adam, I'm handing you the bag.
Oh, well, thank you.
You get the honors of picking the first one.
All right, let's take a gander here. Our first one, and it's a tough one to start with, deaths in 2025.
That's really the first one you picked?
It is. Oh. Not fibbing. You can see it right there.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot believe that is the first one you picked. All right, here we go. This one is, it's always sad. Those who passed away over the last year. Here are the high-profile people we lost in 2025.
We said goodbye to Pope Francis in 2025. His successor became the first American pope. From the heavens to the stars and the loss of Apollo astronaut James Lovell.
Houston, we've had a problem.
The most influential vice president in U.S. history, Dick Cheney, also died. Former President George W. Bush.
In moments of testing, Dick Cheney was a model of concentration, alertness, and composure.
Anthropologist and conservationist Jane Goodall died at 91, leaving behind a legacy of rocking Ozzy Osbourne.
Rock at the moon.
We also lost Kiss's Ace Frehley, Reggae Grammy winner Jimmy Cliff.
You can get it if you really want.
There was also Funkmaster Sly Stone and a Beach Boy who never surfed, Brian Wilson. Hollywood mourns the loss of Academy Award winners Gene Hackman and Diane Keaton.
La-di-da, la-la.
Malcolm Jamal Warner died this year, Val Kilmer and Robert Redford.
Go pick me out a winner, Bobby.
And we lost two Flos, Diane Ladd of Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore and Polly Holiday of TV's Alice.
Kiss my grits!
Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News.
Hopefully no more. We have a couple days left.